McNeil. Syria's military says it entered the key Kurdish-held town of Manbij in an apparent deal with the Kurds, who are looking for new allies and protection against a threatened Turkish offensive. Turkey and American troops patrolling the town denied there was any change of forces in the contested area, contradicting the Syrians and highlighting the potential for chaos in the wake of last week's surprise announcement by the United States that it is withdrawing its troops from there. The U.S. government partial shutdown continues, as we hear from AP Sagar Magani.
The White House says it expects the shutdown to last a while and is squarely blaming Democrats.
Chuck Schumer says we're very far apart. The reason for that is they've left the table altogether, so of course we're far apart.
Trump spokeswoman Sarah Sanders on CBS This Morning, not long before incoming acting chief of staff Mick Mulvaney said Democrats told him last night they're done negotiating over the border wall money the president's demanding.
The discussions have broken down. We do expect this to go on for a while.
The president raised the stakes this morning, reissuing an old threat to close the southern border if he doesn't get money for the wall. The shutdown's nearly a week old, affecting about 800,000 federal workers. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And President Trump on Friday again, once again threatened to close the entire U.S.-Mexico border and cut aid to Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador if Congress fails to give him the money to fund the proposed border wall. The comments come as the U.S. government enters the seventh day of a partial shutdown. As the budget standoff continues between Mr. Trump, who wants the $5 billion in wall funding, and Democratic lawmakers who back a modest increase in overall border security funding, but they resolutely oppose a border wall. President Trump said he's going to close the entire U.S.-Mexico border if they don't. This is VOA News. An autopsy has revealed that an 8-year-old Guatemalan boy had the flu when he died while in Customs and Border Protection custody in the southwestern U.S. state of New Mexico. Felipe Alonso, who died on Christmas Eve, is the second Guatemalan child to die this month while in U.S. custody, Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen.
You have my commitment to ensure that all of our detention centers take good care of those in our care.
And Nielsen is visiting the U.S. border with Mexico to get a firsthand look at holding facilities for immigrants. In his New Year's message, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres urges international cooperation to resolve the many dangers and divisions facing humanity. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UN European headquarters in Geneva.
As Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres carries the burdens of the world upon his shoulders. At the same time, he's expected to be the world's cheerleader in chief, reassuring nations that solutions to the world's many problems are available. He does not disappoint in either category. On the one hand, he wishes the world a happy, peaceful, and prosperous New Year. On the other hand, he issues a stark warning about the many crises and risks threatening global stability and security. Chief among these is climate change, which he says is moving faster than it can be controlled. But Guterres does not throw up his hands in despair. Rather, he notes work is moving ahead, albeit slowly, to confront this danger.
Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA. A Spanish aid boat carrying more than 300 migrants rescued at sea has arrived in Spain, ending a week-long journey across the western Mediterranean. AP's Zaria Shackley.
The boat, operated by the non-profit group Proactiva Open Arms, docked at the Spanish port of Algeciras. The boat rescued the migrants in waters near Libya last week, but had to travel to Spain after Malta denied it permission to dock and Italy and other countries refused to help. In June, Spain opened its ports to another aid ship belonging to SOS Mediterranean Sea and Doctors Without Borders, carrying over 600 rescued migrants after Italy and Malta refused to let it dock. I'm Zaria Shakli.
And Yemen's Houthi rebels have started withdrawing from the port of Hodeidah, UN officials said Saturday. Handing over control of Hodeidah, a key lifeline for Yemen, was included in a UN-sponsored agreement signed in Sweden earlier this month. The withdrawal is one in a series of measures in the agreement that could lead to an end of the Yemen's 4-year-old civil war. Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
You know, a good majority to pass our program so we can tomorrow change things in the Congo for the Congolese to live a better life.
Martin Fayulu, a Congolese presidential candidate, is confident of winning Sunday's poll.
This government now using almost 40% of country resources in war and around another 40% in the security to protect themselves. Now, 80% of the country resources is not going to the citizens and to people directly.
Sudanese main opposition party calls on President Omar Hassan al-Bashir to step down.
The people are commenting on the statements that Dr. Joyce Banda is making because she is relevant, because she is in the race, because they know she's a threat, she will actually get into government.
And a former Malawian president calls for a reduction of nomination fees for candidates ahead of next year's general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Martin Fayulu, a joint Democratic Republic of Congo presidential candidate, remains confident that he will win the rescheduled election Sunday. Fayulu's remark came after the latest opinion poll showed he would win the vote with 44% of all ballots cast. The poll conducted by the Congo Research Group, based in New York, showed Felix Tshisekedi of the Union for Democracy and Social Progress, or UDPS, has dropped to second place. President Kabila's preferred candidate, Emmanuel Ramazani Shadari, came in third with 18%. Meanwhile, he tells me that for a transparent and credible vote, the international community must pressure the administration in Kinshasa not to interfere in Sunday's poll.
I'm happy because the reality is there, and the poll is there, and we are waiting for that to be materialized on Sunday. But we know also that Mr. Nanga wants to organize a chaos. He's not prepared to organize a fair and credible election. The poll is clear. What the people of Congo, the Congolese, have said during my campaign, and even if where I didn't go, and everybody is requesting for number four, Fayulu, we hope. And Mr. Nanga will not do something which will not reflect the will of the Congolese.
How were you able to do it, you and your campaign? Because the last opinion poll, you were third behind Felix Tshisekedi. Emmanuel Shadari came third. Now you are way ahead with 47% of the poll, according to the latest opinion poll. How did you get there?
Yeah, but the first one, I said it was a fake. But today, you see that the agencies that have done that poll, they are not only the Bercy. They have added another one. I think the new institution is well-trained. And because I agree that for the first one, I maybe could have not have the same score than today, because today, to my score, you have to add those surrounding me. You have Jean-Pierre Bemba, Moïse Katumbi, Adolphe Muzito, Freddy Matungulu, and others. And it's a coalition. But the last time, I think it was something that they did it in rush, and also the sample was not big. The 670-something people responded to the poll. I think you cannot base an opinion with that number.
Some of your supporters are calling for international pressure to be put on CNE as well as the government not to undermine Sunday's election. What is your personal opinion about this?
That I totally agree. The Congolese want change. And the change today equal Martin Fayulu plus Lamuka. And that's why everybody is calling for that election. But we know also that Kabila is not prepared to leave the power. but we are not, we don't to have his opinion. We want the opinion of Congolese, and the Congolese, they will go to the election and to remove him from power.
Are you suspicious that the elections will be scuttled because you said the president doesn't want to leave power?
Yeah, for sure.
So what are you telling your supporters ahead of the elections? What are you telling them ahead of the election?
Man, I'm telling them that they have to go on Sunday to the polling station and they have to vote. They have to request for that ballot paper. As Sammy said, the ballot paper, the machine is meant to print the ballot paper and to take the paper and to drop it in the, where they have to. Everybody has to go and vote. As they know, they have to vote for Fayulu and for the legislative to vote those Lamuka candidates, because we need the change. We need a strong government with a good position in the National Assembly, a good majority to pass our program, so we can tomorrow change things in the Congo for the Congolese to live a better life.
Martin Fayulu is a Congolese presidential candidate. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Sudanese opposition Umma Party is calling for the immediate release of all political prisoners. It also wants President Omar Hassan al-Bashir to peacefully hand over power after accusing him of failing to effectively address the weakening economy. There have been protests in major cities across the country over increasing food and fuel prices. The protesters have also been demanding regime change, but administration officials have rejected those calls, insisting that the government is implementing new measures to jumpstart the economy and improve living conditions. For reaction, I reached Dr. Mohamed El Ansari, a leading member of the Sudanese opposition Umma Party.
All the political detainees and all people arrested should be released immediately, with immediate effect. Unfortunately, the government has not responded to this, especially Bashir is the subject of the international arrest warrant, which it will make him like hesitant of making any actions, and that one issued by International Criminal Court for 5 counts of crime against humanity, and that like it make him to use the power to maximum possible options just to protect himself from going to International Criminal Court.
Your party is also calling on President Bashir to step down or hand over power peacefully. Why are you saying that? Because the National Congress Party people are saying you are just playing politics and that you should stop doing so instead of trying to find alternative ways to resolve the economic challenges the country is facing. You are trying to plunge the country into chaos.
Yes, the president of Umma Party is the official prime minister of the country when she came to the power in 1989 through military coup. Since that time, we challenged the government and we worked with all political parties in Sudan to remove the regime from power. And this regime, now they lost their opportunities of carrying on in ruling Sudan. And all Sudanese people now are united to start a new era of development of peaceful situations. And unfortunately, the regime, they are trying to do their best, especially they're using their power to create a lot of damage.
Dr. Ansari, the government is saying that the Umma Party supporters have been urged by your leader just to create confusion and undermine the country's peace. And the protest that Umma Party has been engaged in, it's meant to clash with the security officials and then claim to be victims. How do you react to it?
The president of Umma Party have been in prisons for almost 6 years in and out through the regimes in the last 30 years. And we found it recently, alliance of Sudanese political parties is called Sudan Call. And this Sudan Call, is one of the biggest national movements in the country now, asking for regime or working for regime change to make some changes in our country.
In this instance where the economy looks bleak and people are demonstrating because of increasing food and fuel prices, what is the next step for the Umma Party?
So Umma Party it has major actions, immediate regime change. We hope that Bashir can peacefully, without increasing the blood in the country, just we need him to move peacefully. We need him to go to leave the power and let Sudanese people to act in their way. As a National Umar Party, we have something is called alternative policies in economic, in health, in social activities, in services, in all sectors that human beings need to have just to enjoy their life and have peaceful time as a people, as a families, as nations. And this government now using almost 40% of the country resources in war and around another 40% in the security to protect themselves. Now, 80% of the country resources is not going to the citizens and to people directly. So as a party, we will invest this money in Sudanese people. We invest it in peace. We invest it in building the country.
Dr. Mohamed El Ansari is a leading member of the Sudanese opposition Umma Party. He spoke with me from London. The former Malawian president is calling for a review of nomination fees for political candidates. Dr. Joyce Banda, leader of the opposition People's Party, says they are too expensive and preventing well-meaning Malawians from seeking political office. Nomination fees for presidential candidates are now $2,700, but opposition leaders say they are overly expensive. Opposition candidates are reportedly considering a legal challenge which would force the Electoral Commission to reinstate refunds. To learn more about the former president's concerns, I reach Andekuche Chantunya, spokesperson for Joyce Banda.
Now, what the former president, Dr. Joyce Banda, is saying is that these fees are really high. They are working as a barrier to leadership. So there will be people who can actually make good leaders but do not have such huge amounts of money, and that those will then be barred from running for office, which then deprives this country of good and quality leaders because they do not have money. And what she is saying is just because someone is poor and cannot raise such funds doesn't mean that that person cannot be a leader. We have traditional leaders who are chiefs in our villages who actually lead all the villages everywhere in this country. And to say that if any one of them cannot run for office, if they cannot raise 500,000 or 200,000 or 2 million, is really unjust. It's undemocratic. And that is what she is saying.
Why would she say it's undemocratic, and why now, specifically when a similar thing was prevailing when she ran for office the last election, which the current president was declared winner, her critics say?
When she was running for president, the fees were not this high. For councillors, it was 10,000. For MPs, it was 50,000. And for presidents, it was like 200,000 or 250,000 or somewhere thereabouts. So these fees were not really high. So they were only a symbol of seriousness in a candidate. So they weren't very high. These are really high. And in a country where people live on less than $1 a day, the current amounts are really too high.
Some people are saying that she made this call for the reduction at a political rally. She has yet to officially write a letter to the Malawi Electoral Commission, and that this is just a publicity stunt just to score cheap political points ahead of the May elections. How do you respond to that?
Actually, the fact that she made that statement shows that she's actually made a statement. The statement was made at a political rally, yes, which is actually a statement. Now, in our country, like in any democratic country, politicians will make public statements of their positions to make people know what their positions are, which is exactly what she has done. She's made known her position.
Well, some are saying that her statement is neither here nor there because they said this is all made for her to look politically relevant because she has lost significant political momentum. That is why she's making all these statements. Your take?
If she is relevant, why are they responding to what she is saying? Because the only reason why they would respond is because she is not irrelevant. It is because she is actually in the race and she has a huge momentum. There's a whole huge momentum of the Orange Movement that has been revived since Dr. Joyce Banda came back. Now, people are commenting on the statements that Dr. Joyce Banda is making because she is relevant, because she is in the race, because they know she's a threat. She will actually get into government.
Well, some are also saying that they've taken issue with her statement that she will abolish licensing renewal fees because it's too exorbitant. They question why she's making that statement, because when she was president, she did nothing about it. What do you say to that?
No, I think that every political party, political parties and their policies are living documents, so they are bound to change. Positions that a party holds at this election will not necessarily be the same as what they will hold at the next election. It all depends on what happens in between. Now, what Dr. Joyce Banda is saying is, look, okay, so you get a driving license and you will be required to go for tests again when you're 40. It is unbelievable that a person who is 25 and is driving every year, every day of his life, for you to then have him renew his license after 5 years or so. So what as a policy of the People's Party is saying, look, you don't need to do that. You can check people out when they're 40 or when they're 50, because then they have eyesight issues and et cetera. So you just check and verify. And if their eyesight is still good, if they're 60 and their eyesight is still good, then they really don't have to go through a whole process again.
And Ndekuche Chantunya is the spokesperson for the Malawian former president, Joyce Banda. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. The leader of the opposition in the Ugandan parliament has called on Bobi Wine to file a suit against police officers who blocked his December 26 musical concert. Betty Ochan says the officers and their superiors acted illegally, but the police officers say they were just following orders. Local media reports say armed police officers backed by armed vehicles and water cannons dispersed the crowd gathered for the show. For the latest development, I reached parliamentarian Betty Ochan in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
We had a heated debate which took a long time, and we resolved that Bobi Wine should be allowed to conduct his shows, because the shows are for his site, income generation, and also for his social rights, and also for political mobilization. He is a politician. People should not stand on his way. But the police continue adamantly, without even respecting what Parliament came out with. And the police, if you try to ask them, they say order comes from above. That above, we have a complete chapter of human rights in our constitution, chapter 4. And that is really wrong. So I do not know whether it should now go to court. But you know, court case also in Uganda is a big problem. You can go to court and you can forever be there in court and without coming out quickly with the...
Some people are saying the action taken by police to block the concert was unacceptable and unethical, and you are on record calling on him or advising him to file a suit in court against those police officers who blocked the concert. How would this be with the kind of judiciary as you described?
That is where we get stuck. So sometimes when we say we are in a democratic governance, it has a lot still to be worked on. The democracy still has a lot of loopholes. So that's why even in parliament, you find that we still have even soldiers in parliament who are there as soldiers. And yet, ordinarily, if a soldier who wants to be a member of parliament should resign his or her position and go and contest the way others contest. But this is not the case. So even the way our state institutions work, it works best for one person. It should be for all of us Ugandans, because we pay them from our tax money. So they must work for us. So really, I don't know. We will have to step again together and push the head of parliament. And the head of parliament is the Speaker of Parliament. That what should we do? Is it not very clear that the parliament is just either a rubber stamp or is not doing anything, is never respected, and yet it is the highest organ in that country?
This is the sixth time that the Ugandan police have blocked the shows of Bobby Wine. But recently, the police came up with a directive calling organizers to seek clearance from the Inspector General of Police before organizing the event. Critics of Bobby Wine in the government are saying that he never sought clearance from the IGP and went ahead with his concert anyway.
I don't know. I'm not very sure about that, if he has not really sought for... I don't like to call it permission, really. It is just to inform so that they take their responsibility of taking care of security. But they have now turned it as it's a permission. You must first get a letter from the IGP, a letter of for allowing you to go ahead, no objection, which for me, it's not right. I feel so bad. It's sitting on our rights too much. A leader like Honorable Chagulanyi or any other member of parliament, other people are carrying on with their shows. Why stop that one of Bobby Wine? It's not about not asking, but it is political reason.
So let me ask you this. The new guidelines include indicating to the police the expected number of people who will be attending, the available crowd control measures, and the capacity of the organizers to handle emergencies, among other requirements. Why do you think this is objectionable? Because the police want to protect life and property as a result of this, because there have been instances where it's gotten out of hand.
Protecting property. Whose property? You see, even in Bobby Wine's own premise, that is in his own business place, he was blocked. He was blocked. And that is his own home. It is almost like blocking him from organizing show in his own home. So what is that property that government wants to protect? It is very political. All the reasons which they are giving, they are not giving the right thing. They are not speaking truthfully. They are doing to block Bobby Wine politically. They know that if he continues with his show, he's able to raise a lot of money, and that money will also help him to continue, challenging government.
Betty Ochang is the leader of the opposition in the Ugandan parliament. She spoke with me from Kampala. The Cameroonian government says it is suspending the payment of wages to 25,000 civil servants whom it says may have died or left the country but continue to defraud the country. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's finance minister, Louis-Paul Motaze, says after a census of employees taken in April, the government realized it was losing hundreds of millions of dollars every year to people claiming salaries as state workers. Motaze says some had died, but their families and hierarchy did not report their deaths. Others had abandoned their posts or were drawing double salaries with the help of fellow workers. He says they have started removing such workers from the state's payroll.
An average of 310,000 people were concerned. And after this census, we didn't see more than 25,000. That means we are going to suspend.
Motaze did not say how much money the government will save by eliminating the fictitious state workers. Minister of the Civil Service, Joseph Lay, says this year's census of state workers was very efficient because police tracked down some 8,000 workers who were living in Europe and America.
You can't continue paying a salary to somebody who doesn't exist. There are some who never work here in the country. They stay abroad. And when it started, many Cameroonians came from abroad just to sign their presence here and go back. This should stop.
The government says some of the illegal workers previously lived in the restive English-speaking regions where fighting between government forces and separatists have killed nearly 1,000 people. This is not Cameroon's first purge of so-called ghost workers. The country said in 2015 it was cleaning its payroll of 10,000 dead or fictitious employees who cost it some $12 million every month. However, lawyer Akere Muna, founder of the Cameroon chapter of the anti-corruption watchdog Transparency International, says corruption is widespread in Cameroon and targeting ghost workers will not entirely solve the problem.
Cameroonian civil servants don't live off their salary. They live from a system where they have put toll gates everywhere. You cannot get people who are thieves to look over thieves.
Muna said whistleblowing is the key to fighting graft, but that many people are afraid to come forward as they feel it is too dangerous or ineffective. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in his New Year's message, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urges international cooperation to resolve the many dangers and divisions facing humanity. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
As Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres carries the burdens of the world upon his shoulders. At the same time, he is expected to be the world's cheerleader-in-chief, reassuring nations that solutions to the world's many problems are available. He does not disappoint in either category. On the one hand, he wishes the world a happy, peaceful, and prosperous New Year. On the other hand, he issues a stark warning about the many crises and risks threatening global stability and security. Chief among these is climate change, which he says is moving faster than it can be controlled. But Guterres does not throw up his hands in despair. Rather, he notes work is moving ahead, albeit slowly, to confront this danger.
The United Nations was able to bring countries together in Katowice to approve the work program for the implementation of the Paris Agreement on climate change. Now we need to increase ambition to beat this existential threat. It's time to seize our last best chance. It's time to stop uncontrolled and spiraling climate change.
Guterres warns geopolitical divisions are deepening, making conflicts more difficult to resolve. He says inequality is growing, with only a handful of people owning most of the world's wealth. He notes intolerance is on the rise. Despite this grim picture, he sees reasons for hope. The UN chief finds chances for peace in Yemen and South Sudan are better than ever. He says a recently signed agreement between Ethiopia and Eritrea is easing tensions between the two countries. He says these and other hopeful developments show when international cooperation works, the world wins. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Some Africans say traditional practices and modern life are at odds, but the Inter-African Committee on Traditional Practices, or IAC, disagrees. For 35 years, the Addis Ababa-based IAC has promoted healthy traditional practices such as respect and shared responsibility for elders and children. At the same time, it fights traditional practices that harm the health and well-being of girls and women. In the first of a two-part series, VOA's Adam Phillips examines the IAC's grassroots work against female genital mutilation, or FGM, the practice of removing any part of the external sex organs of a girl or young woman for non-medical purposes.
The seed for the IAC was planted in 1983 when founder Dr. Morisanda Kouyaté was at work in a hospital in Guinea and two twin girls were brought in bleeding to death from a botched FGM procedure. It broke his heart. Since then, Dr. Kouyaté has received nearly two dozen humanitarian honors. However, he was initially warned off his activism by other Muslims who claimed Islam required the operation.
People were saying, look, they will kill you. Please stop it. It's not good. You will go to hell. I said, let me go to Mecca and verify by myself.
In Medina, he met the top imam, Sheikh Subayyeh, and asked him what the Quran and Islam say about female genital mutilation. The cleric responded that the practice has no place in the Muslim faith.
I said, okay, now the fight will be more energized.
Kouyaté says that doctors, nurses, and village school teachers have one key tool in the fight against FGM. People tend to trust what they say.
So we are, you know, taking this position to give more explanation to them. It can take time because for them, you know, wake up like that one day and say, okay, what you were doing, what your grandparents were doing is not good. It's complicated for them. But we have to move with them, not coming as a teacher, coming from university saying, you guys, you don't know anything. No, because they are not stupid people. They just need to create a logical frame. We are teaching each other.
He begins by citing FGM as a major cause of death during childbirth, often from vaginal bleeding.
I said, you know why? They said, no. So we have to tell them, look, it's linked to the female genital mutilation because the elasticity of the female organ has gone. Their organ has been transformed. And now it's not responding well, and they can lose their babies, they can lose their own life. And immediately they said, oh, that's true. You know, my neighbor, she was bleeding.
Sometimes Kouyaté demonstrates how traditions can evolve without being abandoned. For example, he points out how the grandparents of many clothed villagers once walked around nearly naked. If offered those skimpy garments today, most of their descendants would decline.
If you give this small clothes to them, they say, oh, no, 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 this is for my grandparents. I can't take that. I need to be more dressed. I said, okay. But the most important tradition is your clothes. If you make change on it, it's important not just to abandon, but to improve your life.
In some parts of Africa, Kouyaté and his colleagues encourage people to maintain the ceremonies associated with FGM as a rite of passage into womanhood, but without the actual cutting.
And people said, okay, yeah, we will do everything else. But nobody knows if it's true or if they cut and say we didn't cut.
The Inter-African Committee maintains offices in 29 countries on the continent and 22 non-African nations in the diaspora, where many Africans still practice FGM as a way to maintain their culture. Here again, Kouyaté uses psychology.
And one thing that we are doing is to show them, look, you are in the U.S., you think you are the best here, but more progress is, you know, happening in your own country. They are talking out against FGM, so they change their mind.
Tomorrow, in the second part of our two-part series, we'll learn about the efforts Morisande Kouyaté and the committee are making to end child marriage. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection. You'll be hearing from P Square, Nobody Ugly, Yvonne Chaka Chaka with Mbobo T, Khalid featuring Pitbull, Hiya Hiya, and Nadia Mukami, African Lover.
For Instagram, Bamaka. You find no, you don't find no idea, Macha. But for reality, I see you get you badam. And we did deceive you. Gene and your woman, Imani Maka. If you're sitting there, Mono, Tepesiana Chaka. Because it can be easy and work at Daka. Now we did deceive you. Insta, sexy food, delicious twister. Hey, why you two they lie? Yeah? When nothing there to they shake you, where they waste you? As you there for Twitter, your twister, sexy food, delicious twister. Hey. Why you do the shy, yeah? When you know, say you fine, yeah. Don't be like you. Shopping, take a selfie, tag up, tag up. You post them up, they tag your magam, bagam, bagam. You day they for me, go ye when you day, baja. Now who you day deceive you? Hey, you see G-Wagon, chakam. You day big mansion, chakam. Even for toilets, near room, chakam. Snapchatting video, chakam. Just twist that. Hey. Why you do the lie? When nothing there to the shake you, where they waste you? As you there for Twitter, your name for Insta, sexy food, delicious twister. Hey. Why you do the shy? When you know, say you find you, don't be like you.
Thank you. Christian Grey, but please, baby, you can call me Christian Gris. I'll make you fall in love, I'm a thief with the heart. To me, it's an art. Baby, your eyes don't lie. I can see you want a little bit of me in your life. I can treat you like the princess you are, but behind closed doors, we can do it all. Ladies first, when I open doors, I got an open mind, let me open yours. You can come see me while I'm on tour, but till then, besito mi amor.
Watching you, watching me, yeah. And I'm gonna give you what's your alright. Watching you, watching me, watching you, watching me, yeah. And I'm gonna give you what you alright.
Roho yangu kwa tu, kuwa na wewe. nimekufa na tayari nishaoza. Chai sukari mpenzi emukoleza, usije ukakurupuka ukajanacha kwa jeneza. Familia yangu iko polisi na kutafuta, nasikia unabongera kesi la kuniteka mi. Naona wengi sana wazuri sana, ila kwako nimekwama, sijateleza kukuchagua. Nichoche, nichoche kama moto, nichoche fuja mifupa kama meno ipo. Kwatu roho yangu kwatu, oh polisi uwa na wewe, itapigwa na majeshi kwatu, utakuja kunipa roho yangu kwatu, nikikukuta na nikishika kiuno unishike mabega, ayaya unaponigusa kokote mwenzako nalege, ayaya baby momo uliponishiki, ayaya ukingolewa meno mwenzako na vimba mdomo pia.
Oh, baby, I can't wait to have it in my kingdom.
Baby, give me goosey pimple with your cute little dimple. I know if it lie. This one, you know, be to chop and drop. You know, be to point and chop. You know, you bad. Eat my body, they dance.
Yemi Alade Nakam. But before then, you heard Asle with Kwatu. That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Nashwan Kale, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the grains of a corn in a bottle get viewed with disdain by the hen. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil.